God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. All right, anyone can use the chat function to send their number. Okay, that's redundant. Nobody raised their hand. Sorry, folks. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we will be discussing steps 8 and 9, our part 2 of those. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Grace S. and Ross D. And I will put up on the screen and read the first paragraph, which is taken from page 80 in the big book. All right, steps 8 and 9, part 2, section 1. The chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Now, Grace and Ross, which of you would like to go first?
Ladies first.
All right. And Grace, you're able to unmute.
There you go. I was going to say, I'll let Ross take this one first. Do I get to choose? There you go, Ross.
There you go, Ross.
All right, sure. I'm Ross. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be with you guys tonight. I think this is my third time speaking at Simple Actions. I will tell you that the last two, I prepared for them and I read up and I thought about what I was going to say and I looked at the passages and I wanted to have a game plan coming in. My life is so busy today with so many wonderful things going on that I had no time. I had no time to study up. So I just looked at that and wow, what a doozy to start with tonight, the sex relations and how it affects the home. My sobriety date is January 23rd, 2015. I have a home group, the We Are Not Saints group. We meet in Chicks Beach on Saturday and Sunday at 6 o'clock. We're a big book study on Saturday and a 12 and 12 study on Sunday. And I do have a sponsor. As we like to say, my sponsor knows that he's my sponsor. And what I mean by that is that I call him regularly. I text with him. We do a ton of service work together. And even though I've gone through the steps a couple of times, I still go over to his house once a week to sit down at his kitchen table and continue to talk about recovery and read AA literature and do all of those things. He knows that he's mine and I know that he knows that I'm his and I know that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous on that day in January 23rd, 2015. At 36 years old, I'd never heard about Alcoholics Anonymous before. I'd never been ordered to go by the courts, nothing like that, because I was in a desperate place. And 21 years of drinking had taken me to places that I never thought that I would go. When I first put alcohol into my system at 15 years old, it gave me everything that I felt like I wanted in life. It tightened my bond with my friends. You know, it allowed me to talk all the stuff that you allowed me to talk to girls. I thought I was the tallest guy in the room and that I could perform any athletic feat. And that was my MO. And as as I got going, I ended up being a college dropout. I ended up landing a pretty decent job. But the most important thing for me was to go to as many Phish concerts as I possibly could. That was like the highest on the, that was the highest on the priority list, because there I found the people that like to party the same way that I do. And all that went well for a time, right? I get married, I have kids, I've got a good job, I've got the house, I got the cars, everything looks good for a while. But alcohol turned on me. And, you know, without going into too many of the details, as last 5 years of drinking took me to some pretty dark places in terms of alcohol abuse and drug abuse. And I came in crawling to Alcoholics Anonymous, just absolutely crawling. I'd ruined everything that was worthwhile in life, my marriage, my relationship with my 9-year-old and 5-year-old kids at that point, parents, in-laws, job, finances, all of it out the window. And I got no answers. I got no solution. I don't know what to do. So I get put into to detox, which I thought was rehab. I thought the psych center was rehab, but it was just a detox. I soon learned what that was. And I was introduced to you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you carried a message of hope that I latched onto and ended up doing all the things that were necessary to recover from alcoholism. Case in point, working the steps with a sponsor. So let me tell you a little bit about my marriage. I met my wife, who David Francis set a point for me. I said his name. David Francis has known for a very long time, her entire life, basically. But I met my wife when she was 19 and I was 21. And we met at a Super Bowl party, and we both seemed to really like each other. Well, the next weekend, I had tickets to a concert in Blacksburg, Virginia. Okay, so I'm 21. She's 19. She's living with her parents. And I got an extra ticket to this concert. And I really want her to go. Like, I was head over heels, like right at that first time we met. Right. So I finally get up the courage about midweek to ask her if she wants to go on a road trip for our first date. Right. Who does that? Right. But I'm going to ask this girl if she wants to go on a road trip for our first date. But I can't just ask her if she wants to go. Like, I got to build it up. And my selling point, you know, I should have just been enough. Right? I had to sell it. And my selling point was that I've got the best ecstasy that you've ever had, a jar full of weed, and I got a cooler full of beer. Do you want to go? And she says, hell yeah, I got the sleeping pills. And I was like, ah, this is awesome. And that was my first date. That was my first date with my wife. So if that tells you anything about how our relationship started, I mean, it was gonna progress in that manner. But we were two different people. And we were just talking about this the other day. I am the socialite that likes to go out and find all these places that we talked about, right? All these places, the nightclubs, their equivalent. Like, I'm looking around for that type of activity. I need that sort of excitement. I need that sort of interaction. And most of you in here know my wife. She's also in the program. She came in a few months after me, but she was not that way. She was the, you know, I want to stay at home and take care of my drinking the way that I want to take care of it at home. And we really began to grow apart in that fashion. And both of us are suffering from deep alcoholism separate, right? We live in the same house. We have the sheet of paper that says we're married. We've got the two kids, but our lives are going in a completely opposite direction. And I can only talk about my side of the street, but I did want to set the stage because my situation is somewhat unique with both of us coming in there 6 months apart. But I did all of these things, right? I was never satisfied at home. I always had to get out of the house because I wasn't comfortable. My problems were piling up. I didn't have any answers for them. And I am out chasing because what ends up happening is I don't know how to stop. Right. So my behavior over time continues to get worse and worse and worse. And I want to stop drinking and I can't. And my behavior gets worse and worse. And the consequences continue to get worse. And I've got no answer. Right. And I've got no answer for any of the harm that I've done my wife, for any of the harm that I've done my family, for the liar, the cheat, and the thief that I've become. I've got no answer. The only thing that I think that I've got is death. And I wished for that, because I felt like my wife and my kids would be better off if I didn't wake up. That day never came. But again, I mentioned coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I can't, I'm glad that the step is where it is, because I had to go through 8 other steps to get to this point. You know, I had to go through the first 7 steps to be able to get to a point where I can write a list. I can come up with my plan of attack with my sponsor to talk with my wife about all these things. So thank God that the program is laid out the way that it is, because if I'd have come to her right after rehab and go, look, let me just open up to you about all the things and let me tell you how sorry I am. And can it please just be better? Well, that wasn't going to work because I've been a long time. I had to follow the process. I had to do it with a sponsor so that I could get to a point where I could have this conversation and so that my wife could see the change. She knew that I'd changed by the, so I've talked enough. Thank you, Grace, for allowing me to start. And I know we've got some more sections to read. So with that, I'll stop and pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Ross. Thank you. No, I'm glad you started. I don't really need to say anything now. Grace, I'm an alcoholic. I'll say that. I qualified just for a sec. My sobriety date is August 31, 2011. By the grace of God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I managed to pick up 10 years recently. And I too have a sponsor, and she definitely knows that she's my sponsor too. I have a home group. It's a great home group. It's Chesapeake Big Book Study. We meet at 5:30 on Sundays at Agape Church on Bainbridge. If you've got nothing better to do on a Sunday afternoon, please come and see us. It's a big book study. This paragraph, by the time I got here, I was a lot older than Ross was, and I had managed to get rid of every relationship other than the ones that couldn't leave me. They were gone. I was married for a long time. We split, we divorced, and he got in the way of my drinking, and he had to go, and he killed himself. All the other relationships I had after that and before I got sober were my drinking buddies, people who partied like me, who worked like me or didn't work like me, who had kids or didn't have kids, but certainly their children weren't priorities. So when I got here, there wasn't anybody. So if you take out the husband and wife thing, though, and you look at the relationships that I had left, which were with my kids and my my birth family, they were a wreck. They were an absolute wreck. And, you know, I think I was doing the very best I could, but I came in here with very little. So when I got here and I put the drink down, which I'm blessed, my drinking took me to that place where I didn't want to drink anymore. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous very, 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 very willing to do whatever it took to not want to die, just like Ross said, because that's where it took. And the ninth step, I love this step. I like to talk about it, although my amends were none of them were short and sweet. When I got here, it looked to me like a big bill coming due because I owed a whole lot of money. And I thought that was the hard part. I found out that was the easy part. We didn't read it, but there's that second part in step eight that is just the crux of it all for me. And that is the willingness to do whatever it takes to be free. Whether it just to do the next right thing, which again, when I got here, I didn't know what that was. Y'all taught me that. So these relationships that I had, I didn't have a husband anymore. My sponsor told me I wasn't allowed to have any relationships for the first year. She said, you just need to practice staying sober and quit playing with humans. You're not well enough. So, and really, just like I was unemployable, I wasn't very attractive either, physically, emotionally, or spiritually. And God always did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I got busy in AA and I stayed focused in AA. And my children, my relationships with my mother, my father had passed. He didn't get to see me get sober. But those relationships I had to start to learn how to not be so self-centered. And I'm not going to talk a whole lot more. There's other paragraphs we're going to read that I, thanks.
All right. Thank you. I'll put the next section up. All right. Section number two. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents for whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" All right, Ross.
All right, there's a lot in, just like all of this entire book, there's a lot in two paragraphs. Sometimes we hear that the alcoholic says the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. And I'll go back to what my sponsor told me and also what Grace touched on. I am so grateful that I was in such a desperate place when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I was ready to, guys said, I didn't balk at a single thing. And I was coming from such a place of hurt. Again, folks, my life had turned into everything that I didn't want it to be. Alcoholism had turned me into this person that I just did not even think would be possible for me to become. And in 5 years, that last 5 years of drinking where I wish for death every day, and I finally got a bit of hope, and I'm reading this literature and I'm working with a sponsor and I'm hanging out with you guys and I'm seeing what this program can do. I didn't balk at a single, Grace mentioned, I stayed busy in AA. I had a lot of stuff going on. I laugh when I work with guys today, and you guys have heard it, right? With the guys and gals that you work with, it's like, but I've got to make good with my wife. And, my kids, they've got a lot going on, and my job, I just got to get back in there and work 50, 60 hours a week. And man, I got to quit smoking, and man, I got to get back in the gym. And, I've always wanted to pick surfing back up again. So I'm going to pick surfing back up, all the stuff that we hear, all the excuses that we hear to stay away from doing what is known to work. And that's the program that's in here. And that's being a part of this fellowship. There's my sponsor, I'm sure he stole this from somebody, but it's the two types of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only two types. There's the people that go to it, and there's the people that are in it. And he put that decision on me. He's like, Ross, so what are you going to be? Are you going to be a person that just goes to it? Or are you going to be a person that's in it? So for me, what I found out is that the closer that I stay to Alcoholics Anonymous through the fellowship, through the service work, through the steps, the better I am at home, the better I am at work. Right. And, we're talking a lot about the spouses here. And I'll even say that, with two people in recovery, both my wife and I, it's like an AA clubhouse around here sometimes, as sponsees kind of coming and going. But we still have to do work in our marriage. Sobriety is not enough. It really isn't. And we have to figure out how to communicate, and we have to figure out how to grow both as individuals and as a married couple. We've had to do a lot of work on that during this COVID period, right? With the kids at the house and me at the house all day. I was pinging Morgan. Yeah, I've been on Zoom from 6:30 till 5:30. I've been on this computer for 11 hours today. So Zoom meetings and me don't mix real well, because I'm kind of tired of it by the end of the day, right? But the strain that has put on our marriage, like in our family, in this home, right? But if I'm drinking, I got no shot. I got no shot if I'm drinking. So I can't pick up a drink no matter what. I've got to give everything I have to Alcoholics Anonymous, to the program, and to carry the message. But I also have to be keen and aware enough to when I need outside help, right? And my marriage, my relationship with my kids, my relationship with my parents and my in-laws, they don't work if I'm just sober. You guys have heard this before, because I know a lot of you have felt it. I'm miserable when I'm not drinking. I'm just miserable. I'm miserable when I'm not drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous has been the only thing to fill that void. So, here I am 6 years into it, and I just don't feel like stopping. I don't feel like stopping doing the things that I'm doing today, because I know that it works. And thank God we read this, right? It's a great reminder for me to come back and read this tonight and say, being sober, Ross, is not enough. Not picking up a drink is not enough. Like, keep giving back to this thing that has given you so much. So here I am accepting an invitation to be on Zoom tonight after I've already done it for 11 hours today. But I can't think of a better place that I would rather be. So with that, I'll pass to Grace.
Thank you, Ross. This is the paragraph it has been stewing in my head. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of, when I got shipped off to rehab in my sobriety date, so I was 31, so it was September of 2011. It was this wonderful place in Greensboro, North Carolina called Fellowship Hall. And they had this really neat serenity trail and all along the way. And just so I had no previous reference to Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps. It truly was my first shot at the big book. So each phase of this trail had a statue for each step. And I remember that first step, they had this sculpture of a tornado. I had no clue. What the hell? I didn't understand. What were they talking about tornadoes for? I had no idea. Couldn't get it. But it was a good visual. When I was making amends to one of my younger sisters, I'm one of 10 kids, the first year going through the steps, and I was parroting very well. You know, I was doing what good AAers or what I thought I should be doing, you know, saying I'm sorry a lot. And, you know, I mean, I had a good inkling of what it should sound like, but it hadn't made that subsequential drop from my head to my heart, you know, where you feel it, where you know. But that's okay. You know, that's okay. I'm still breathing. I've had to do it many times. Anyway, I sit down with her and this poor woman, she's 5 years younger than me, looks at me and she said, "And again, it's all about you." Clearly she was still louching and she really didn't want to hear what I had to say. So I said, oh, I felt that one, ouch, right? And moving on. So this phrase, tornado roaring through other people's lives, at first, you know, I could try not to do that. In interacting with other people, my family, people I have ongoing relationships with, that's sort of my gauge for how not to, at best, not to be the tornado. What I've recognized recently is, though, in standing off, and like with, I have 4 kids. Today, they range in age from 24 to 34. And absolutely miracles of my creator, hot messes, every one of them. And absolutely affected by my alcoholism, not just my drinking, but my inability to have any coping skills in life. I was not capable of being a present mother. It wasn't that I didn't want to. It wasn't that I was incapable. And it didn't take alcohol to make me that way. This is the revelation I've had recently. Alcohol is what made that bearable. And this tornado it is still at best today. I'm able to, it's their journey too. And I'm not a tornado. I can be present today and not be part of the problem anymore, whether it's enabling or joining them, you know, trying to fix it, add to it or whatever. I can, and I'm well enough today to say, I can't deal with it. I can't pick up the phone for whichever one it is and wait. This tornado, my self-centeredness, I couldn't even see it. When I got sober, and that's why I understand, it makes me chuckle, the different phases of this awakening that I feel like I'm having these days. At first it was great that I wasn't drinking anymore and the police weren't bringing me home and I wasn't calling my then 22-year-old son begging him from a jail, you know, cell to come get me or please raise the other 3 kids. That's pretty obvious stuff that stopped. But today, they still wreak the havoc of the parenting that they got. But the cool thing is, you know, we take these inventories, and I don't know about you guys, but my mother and father were on my first inventory. I had all these hit lists, you know, and I'm pretty sure if they ever make it into the rooms and they qualify, I don't know for which one, but I'm going to be on theirs too, which is very cool. And I don't have to be a tornado today. I can feel it when it's welling up in me. You know, when I walk into that room and I'm all full of self-centered bullshit, pardon me. And I can remember that gauge. You know, I don't want to be the tornado anymore. I can be still and know that there is a God and it's not me. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Grace. I'll put the next section up. All right. Section number three. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Okay, Ross?
All right. A long period of reconstruction ahead. I feel like I'm still going long period of reconstruction with just about everyone in my life. And I like here where it talks about sitting down with the family as we analyze the past, as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. And thank goodness for a sponsor here. He taught me this along with the help of this book. He taught me what a true amends means. And for me, my MO for an amends when I was drinking, well, but in hell, even before I drank, my MO for an amends was to just sweep it under the rug. And let's hope that everybody forgets about whatever deed that I'd done the day before. And let's just wake up tomorrow and let's just pretend like, you know, that was my wins. That stopped working after a while, after the incidents, you know, started to roll up. And then my way of making amends turned into, you know, I would continue, you know, I would say that I'm sorry in some sort of a way, but I'd put the blame here, I'd put the blame there, or you know, I'd come up with some sort of lie to make it look quite as bad. So, you know, and I'm doing this to everybody. I'm doing this behavior to every person that cares about. I'm doing it to my wife, I'm doing it to my kids. They were young, they were 9 and 5, but I'm lying to them. I'm lying to my in-laws, I'm lying to my parents, I'm lying to my employer. You know, you care about me and I'm getting in trouble with you and I'm lying about it and I'm trying to sweep it under the rug like nothing is wrong. And so that's the way that I say that I'm sorry. That's the way that I'm making amends. I have no idea how to do this until I get to step 8, right? And I, you know, I thought step five was a good long talk with my sponsor. We went way up in Seashore State Park and set up on a little knoll there overlooking the bay and did our men's, did our fifth step right there. And then when I had my list, he goes, okay, well, come over to my house and we'll sit out by the pool and we'll go over. And I'm thinking, yeah, it'll be 10 minutes. Man, that wasn't a 10 minute meeting. That was it. I had to call Kate and tell her, gosh, I'm sorry. I'm going to be running a little late. This is taking longer than I thought, because we really did. We went through, especially the big ones, right? Especially the big ones. And what he wanted to do is make sure that I was going into it, A, asking for prayer, asking for God's help, but B, from an outside perspective, making sure that I wasn't going into it with any, you know, with any malice, that I was, you know, walking back through the fourth step and looking upon all my family that had harmed me in certain ways and looking at them as sick people and praying for them. Just like the fourth step asked me to do, I'm doing it for them again here as I go out to make these amends. And the cool one with my parents, it actually went really well in that they didn't even want to talk about it, which I don't know that an amends can go any better. And I'll tell you why that happened. I wish some of you guys could meet my dad. He's a big, tough Harley dude. He's the exact opposite of me. You take me, right? Little old Ross, hippie guy. My dad is the exact. tough dredge boat captain, you know, just a tough guy, you know, tattooed. But he's very sensitive. He's got such a sensitive heart. He's, you know, one of my best friends. We've seen many countless John Prine concerts together, but he's my dad's my hero. And I'd let him down. I'd let him and my mom down. And my dad has been one of my best friends and biggest advocates for as long as I can remember. And, I have always had a key to the house and the garage code to their house, right? Until I no longer had the key to the house. All the locks were changed and the garage code was changed. Like that's where, you know, that's what I did. And I was about, I don't know, I'd done my fourth and my fifth step, and my sponsor was taking some time with me on step 6 and 7 before we went into making the list. I mean, I'd come home and I'd prayed it, but we were really talking about what it means for God to remove these defects of character and for me to really be ready to work towards the ultimate goal of getting rid of them, right? To practicing the opposite behaviors that I've always practiced. And one day my dad and I, we were hanging out and he said, hey, let's run up to the store. And we run up to the store with me. I got some stuff to pick up. I need your help carrying stuff. And I said, well, sure. So here's this big, tough Harley dude, you know, sitting right beside me. And we're just driving, listening to music. And all of a sudden I just happened to look over at him. Something felt weird. And I look over at him and there's this big, and he's got tears coming down his face. And I'm going, what the hell is wrong with him? And so I asked him, I was like, Dad, what's up? And he couldn't even get out these words, but as he got them out, he said, I finally got my son back. You know, and that was me working these steps 6 months into the process, you know, doing the AA thing. Finally got my son. My dad finally felt comfortable with me in the room, right? With me in the truck, knowing that something was working. And my 16-year-old just walked by. I don't know if you were able to see him. And, so by the time I get to sit down with my parents, right, because I've got to go make this amends, and a couple months later, a month later, and I go to sit down and I say, all right, guys, I know you all know what's going on with me, with, you know, the journey that I'm on and this AA thing, and part of the process and working the 12 steps is that I need to talk about the past and I need to hear your side of the story and I need to make things right with you guys. And both my parents said, I know exactly what you're trying to do. And I know exactly what you need to do, but we've lived it. We've lived all of it. And my dad repeated what he said in the truck that day. He said, we finally got our son. And my mom looked at me and she said, the only thing that you need to do, Ross, is keep doing. This is amends for us, enough amends for us. We don't need to rehash the past. Now, I wish that I could sit here and tell you that it went the same with my in-laws, but that is a completely different story. And depending upon how these next paragraphs lay out, maybe I'll get into that one, because it wasn't, not that it was bad, but it wasn't as heart-wrenching, you know, as the dad's story. But, you know, going through the rest of these, even the ones with my in-laws, at least I've got a way today to truly mean what I say. I didn't have that ability. I was sweeping it under the rug and I was lying. And today I've learned that I can't sweep things under the rug. And then when something needs to be addressed, I need things.
Thank you, Ross. Okay, so I made mention of this big bill that was coming due for me in the ninth step. And there's these physical amends that I had, and then these relationship amends. But it would not be fair if I did not mention this huge bill that was coming due, because God was so present in this, and I had so much fear. I had not paid taxes in 10 years. I had not filed taxes or paid taxes in 10 years. And I will tell you, that's a really good reason to stay drunk. it kept me drunk a long time. And when I finally sobered up, I could only avoid it, but for so long. I had this incredible fear of the mailbox. I don't know about any of you guys, but every time I went to the mailbox, it blew up. And so I stopped going. I mean, it got so bad that the mailman would just leave little red tags on my door saying I had to come to the post office to get the mail. So, and then, you know, quarterly I'd go do that and then I'd just burn it. You know, bonfire, smoke a joint, have a, you know, whatever. So my sponsor says, no, we have to face life head on. Well, I ducked it as long as I could. And then finally, for no apparent reason, going to the mailbox, I should tell you, I actually moved in across the street from my sponsor. That's, I needed extra eyes on me. And the mailboxes, I lived in these townhouses, they were right across the street from where her townhouse was. So I had to walk there every day and get my mail, and she'd wave at me and I'd walk home. And so God is good. So I know the IRS, I remember telling her, you know what? I got a letter from the IRS. Now I'm sure they've been sending them to me for years. But again, that was my MO, I just didn't look. So I open it up, and of course, this happened within over about a 2 week period. And every day it got worse and worse and worse. It was so bad that all I could do was laugh. It was, because when I got here, I was broke, homeless, and unemployable. I owned nothing but a 20-year-old Suburban that got 8 miles to the gallon. That was it. So there was nothing left to take. And I had a lot of love from AA and strength and support. So I made that phone call. And when it talks about here, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to, that manifests itself for me in so many ways. I didn't know it. I just did the next right thing. And I made that phone call and I called the IRS. And I, guess what? Told the truth. Now, I'm sure I gave her way too much information, because everybody got a good dose of how much of an alcoholic I was and how tragic my life was. And I had tried to kill myself, and, you know, the father of my children was dead, and they got it all. But lo and behold, every time somebody answered the phone, this is what I got. Oh, my father died 20 years sober, or my brother is in recovery, or as God is my witness. And it got easier and easier and easier. And I throw the dollar amount out only because it was so bad, and where it started and where I wound up is nothing but a miracle. And it just is proof. And it gave me the incentive to keep moving. The original bill was $250K. Again, I'm driving a 20-year-old. It's like, but that willingness in step 8, I had it. I had it. And I laughed and I said, what do we do? Can I get on a payment plan? And they laughed at me and said, darling, you don't make enough money for a payment plan. Why don't you sit back and relax and take care of yourself and just stay in touch? And so I said, okay. And they put me in the uncollectible status and put a big fat lien on me. And somebody in the background told me this dirty little secret about all of that. And I was good with that. Was that willingness and that faith and that spiritual life is not a theory. And I didn't even know it. And it took 7 years. I responded to every letter. I did what they said. Any changes in my life, I let them know. And 7 years later, I got a letter that all debts were forgiven and the lien was. Now, how does that happen? I have no idea. I have no. That's the physical stuff. That's when I came in, and that was what scared me so bad. And yet it was so easy when I was willing. It was so easy. What was really tough was the daily living amends I had to make. I didn't know whether to do this one first or last, but my mother was she was a trip. She was my toughest relationship and my best teacher. And I was so mad at her when I got here. I grew up in everything looked really good on the outside, and behind the doors, it was a very toxic household, very, very toxic. And, a lot of bad things happened. I came in here. I had two feelings, mad and hurt. That was it. Mad and hurt. And I had my finger pointed at everybody else. And when I got here, I had to look at the three pointing back at me and figure out how to move forward so that I'd never have to drink again. And my mom, my father had died in 2008, and there wasn't enough vodka on the planet. Trust me, I tried to drink it all. And my mother lived another 10 years, but she was right there. She paid for the rehab. I didn't know it. I was so angry with her. I didn't want to talk to her. I didn't want to. She helped me all along the way. So when I started making these amends, I called my mother every single day, every day after I went to a meeting. And some days I didn't want to have to call my mother. She was a trip. She helped me all along the way, but there was always a payoff. You know, it meant I had to not be so selfish and self-centered. And she was draining. Mom could be draining. And I did this every single day. And I'll tell you, we talked. I would go and I would spend the night once a month and stay at her house for a weekend consistently. The last page on page 88 in the big book, it talks about we alcoholics are undisciplined. And so I had to practice a lot of discipline. I had to do things I didn't want to do. And I had to do it every freaking day. Just like all of my amends. None of them have come with a visit or phone call or a letter. I've had to do it. But I will say this. My mother passed in 2017. And I was present. And I cared for her, and I went there first monthly, then weekly, then every other day. And I spent a lot of time listening, like asking how she was and what her childhood was like. And I got to understand that my mother wasn't my enemy. My mother was another woman just like me who had a story, and I would never ever have even, that was not my idea. That was not my idea. I was sponsored through that. I found a way to let that woman off the hook. And I got to sit there. It was a long night. My three siblings and I sat with her while she was dying. And the other three, they got tired. My little brother fell asleep. My other two, they got up to go do what they do because mom had put them in charge. I asked her about that. She said, well, when I was drawing up the papers, you were in no condition. I was like, oh, okay, there it is. But I sat there and I just watched her, and I watched her take her last breath. And I wasn't sad. I didn't cry. There was absolutely no regret. Everything that was needed to be said had been said. And I was at perfect. I had no fear of death, first of all. And I knew she was done with this life. It was no more fun. And she could go, and she wasn't worried about me anymore. And so, That to me was the spiritual life is not a theory. I had to do that every day, and I didn't always want to do it. When it talked about kindliness and love, the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love, it stopped. I stopped having to tolerate her, and I could allow she could be exactly as she was. And that was the miracle of this. It was an absolute miracle. And I don't want to talk too long, but I'll say this. The father of my children, we were married. We were together almost 20 years. And it was, you know, interesting on a good day. And I was really mad at him, too. There's those mad and hurt. And he had done a lot. I mean, he was a big bullseye. But, you know, I can't be effective if I'm still full of those negative feelings. God can't use me. And I had to start practicing a different vocabulary and change my thinking and actually practice it. And I don't know when it happened, but I will tell you that today I have nothing but love and joy, fondness in my heart. And that is how I make my amends to my children, because that's their father. And so, somebody pointed that out to me. My father died. I was drunk. I didn't get to make those amends. And going to a grave for me and standing there with a letter, I don't know. I can't wrap my head. But what I realized when I was good to my mother all those years, 7 years, that was my amends to my father, because he would have wanted me to help my mom. So these amends set me free. And we got more to read. Thanks.
Thanks, Grace. David, we're getting close to time. I think we can fit in one more section?
Sure.
All right, I'll put the next one up. All right, section number 4. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right, We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we could write them, that we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. All right, Ross?
Sure, I'll make it quick. And I have one that's apropos for this one. So as I was making that list, there were three drug dealers who I owed large sums of money to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we got to the eighth step, I had all three of them listed and the dollar amount beside them. And I was like, well, what do I do? My sponsor's like, well, I don't really want you going into Portsmouth and hunting these guys down. You know, let's just be willing. Be willing for when the time is right to make that payment back. And he promised me that God would show me the time. Well, I'm not making this up. I was on, I think it was Wavy. I think it was wavy.com. And they had a story of this guy who was in a wheelchair and his home was broken into in Portsmouth. And they stole all of his recording equipment, all of his stereo equipment, tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. And it's my drug dealer. And they've set up, and this is like 3 years later. This is 3 years later. After, you know, I've had that meeting with my sponsor to go through my eighth step list, and they had set up a GoFundMe page. So I took care of all three debts on that guy's GoFundMe page. And, you know, and that to me is God doing for me what I can't do for myself. My sponsor said, and this literature says, that if we're willing, God will show us the right place and the right time for everything in life, not just amends, but for everything in life. If I'm living the spiritual life, which is not a theory, if I'm living the spiritual life, then God will show up when he needs to show up. And this is one of those cases for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Ross.
Have we got time?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be quick. My first sponsor was, I'm so grateful to, she was not one to like make me say, you've got to go out and do this. You've got to go, you know, do it right now. It's always been my experience. God's time is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I talk about that dropping from my head to my heart thing. And there are some wrongs we can never fully right. Sometimes it's been my experience that I have to go and reach out to somebody would cause more harm. And the only person that's going to make feel better is me. And some things I've just had to live with. It's also a good gauge, not to do it again, not to act that way again. Real quick story. One of my older brothers was being, I don't know what you call it. He was doing some sort of religious, he was taking some vows. He's becoming a brother. And we never saw that one coming, I'll tell you. And and so Sam and I went, and it was a gathering, and my other siblings would be there, some of them anyway. I tend to limit my exposure to those things. I go, I do like the big book says, I check my motives, I go for why I'm going, and then I get the hell out. And because man, those old dances and the scabs get scratched. And so we're standing outside the church at the beach, and my sister, I said something to my brother, and my little sister corrected me. And it was immediate reversion back to age 15 and 16. You know, all the three of us are standing there scrapping. And Sam, my boyfriend, comes over and he goes, you know, this isn't about y'all. And I went, damn, there it is again. So some of these things are never going to be like I think they ought to, you know, these relationships, which steps 8, 9, and 10 are all about personal relationships. And it's the ones that are ongoing for me that take a change in my thought and attitude, as we read yesterday at my home group. And sometimes when I'm dealing with relationships, old relationships, that old behavior is right under the surface, it's right there. And that's when it takes a little more effort. So I have to remember, I don't grovel. I'm not a doormat. The shit I did in the past does not make me a perpetual punching bag. And I can limit my exposure to that sort of thing because I can't change the past. I can change my behavior today, and I believe I am altered from the inside out. I believe that. I believe it. But that, they get to feel the way they want to feel. So thanks so much, David Francis. Thanks for having me.
Grace wins.
All right.
Sorry, Ross.
All right, folks. Well, that will end the reading and sharing for this evening. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Yeah, actually, there is. I have one. Out here on Friday night in Great Bridge at Great Bridge Presbyterian Church at 7 o'clock, there is a new meeting that has just started on Emotional Sobriety, the book. And it's pretty good. So come join us if you're out and about this way on Friday at 7.
All right. Thanks, Grace. And for those of you who aren't aware, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. And home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us or email info@simpleactions.net. And in closing, again, thank you, Ross and Grace, for sharing this evening. And I'll unmute everyone after the Lord's Prayer and give them a chance to say thank you to Ross and Grace. And Leanne, would you be willing to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
My name's Leanne, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Leanne.
A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Great. Thank you, Leanne.
You're welcome.
All right. And we will now close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. David, how do you do that unmute all? I think that's above my pay grade.
People have to unmute.
Allowed to unmute.
They can unmute themselves if they'd like.
Okay. I've never told anybody to go unmute themselves, but right. Well, with the Lord's Prayer, Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come,
thy will be done
on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
Oh my God, that was everything a meeting should be.